morning and welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHH-FM, your home for community radio. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Mayor Tony Hart makes New Haven tick morning and night. She's here in the WNHH studio for her weekly Mayor Monday checkup on what she and we are up to in the Elm City. Welcome, Mayor Hart.
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
It's great to see you.
Good. Good
spring,
to see you.
Springish day.
It's so nice
it
compared
really is,
to the past couple of days. It's really beautiful out there.
It really is. And Mike Harris, and is your special liaison, legislative liaison? What do we call it?
Special assistant mayor.
Special assistant mayor Mike Harris.
I feel very special.
He's joining us this week on Mayor Monday for our second segment to talk about some exciting stuff going on with entrepreneurism in New Haven, including some ways you can get some money or some great ideas about linking neighborhoods. I know that's not the main thing we're going to talk about, but we're kind of into that one here at the Independent.
Yeah, we're looking for great ideas. Yeah.
And if you have a question for the mayor, feel free to pop it to us via Facebook Live. Here's what you do. You go to New Haven Independent on Facebook, and then you'll see the video right there, and you put your question. Thanks to Gateway Community College and Bertram Moses PC for providing financial support for today's program. Good morning.
Good morning again.
You're right. So,
you forgot to mention that Lawrence was here, too. Good morning, Lawrence.
But he never talks.
I know.
He kind of hides, and we pretend he's not here.
Okay.
Good morning, Lawrence, too. It's great to see you. Lawrence Grothier, the mayor's spokesperson, comes into the studio as well. So, highlight of your weekend, what was the best thing you did this weekend?
You know, I think that one of the, was the program that the New Haven Police Department had to honor the people who'd gone beyond the call of duty over the past 2 years. I think that was
188 awards.
Yeah.
Cops, firefighters, people from other departments, citizens, a yes. lot of cops.
Yeah. yeah. A lot of police officers, but there were citizens, and there were
the guy from Whaley's Dynamic Auto who took his cell phone out and chased the guy who hit a woman in a car after an argument and sped away drunk, and he caught him.
Yep. So there was there were a lot of really, really great stories about going beyond the call of duty, being a great citizen, I think the most moving was the two officers who had been shot in the line of duty.
And that was on Elm Street when the woman was Scott Shumway, and when the woman had been Christmas suicidal, was going to shoot people, right? And,
well, I think that her.
Oh,
her,
he shot his girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah, he shot his girlfriend a number of times, and they were trying to divert his attention from her to get her out of there, and got shot. So it was, and it was an entire team effort. They were out there for many hours, and the thing that's most amazing is that. They didn't kill anybody, but were shot. And, you know, it made me remember that particular day because I went to the hospital to see all of the officers who were there waiting to hear about their colleague, but also just to make sure that those who were not shot were okay. And it was really great to see the look on the faces on Friday, as opposed to the look on the faces at the hospital.
That was a Saturday, I remember, afternoon when the other one happened.
Yeah, and you know, honestly, what you think, you know, everybody thinks, oh, police officers carry a gun, and they're very cavalier about that. The look on the faces of those folks that had to go into the hospital that day just to make sure that they were all right. They weren't the ones that were shot. They were actually in surgery when I got there, but you know, having to use deadly force or what could be deadly force is awesome. And it really, you can see the look on people's faces that it's also, not only is it traumatizing for those people who may have to deal with that in terms of receiving it, but it was traumatizing for them. You know,
I've talked to cops, I've interviewed cops about how it changes your life. Your life's never the same when you've shot somebody.
And so, and just to see, they seem okay now, and you know, certainly those who were shot, they were fine, back on duty, got other awards for doing other acts of bravery and heroism, and then the others who were there, many of whom also got other awards, again, you know, like ready to serve the people of New Haven.
Steve McMorris, he always gets about 97 of those awards.
At least, maybe got 100.
Because this time he got into the house that was burning in the hill, and he got some people out.
Yeah. Oh, he's an amazing young guy. Yeah. You know, he used to work, remember when there was a copy center on Chapel Street? mm-hmm. Downtown. Mm-hmm. When he was in high school, he used to work there.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, can you imagine? And so did one of our police sergeants, Sergeant Jackson. They both worked there after school.
Milt Jackson.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same name as the famous Vibes player. Yeah. Oh, that's his brother. Okay. Wow. Yeah, these things are great. So while you were doing that, people who were protesting bad police work were at City Hall. They said that there needs to be a civilian review board with teeth and subpoena power, and they had a standoff with the officers about whether they come into City Hall, mm-hmm. and they said you're going to meet with them today. What's going to be your message to them?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things, they did give me a letter, I took a look at it. They had some concerns about the way the current proposal was drafted, and you know, some of the things that they raised, I think, were good things to raise. And I sort of texted back and forth, now that you do a lot of texting, with the president of the Board of Alders, and she said to me that they will be taking a look at the proposed amendments and holding off on passing it today.
Oh, so tonight it will not be passed?
No, I don't believe it will be passed, because they want to take a look at their proposed amendments. And then there are others that have proposed amendments as well. And they want to do as thorough of a job the first time as possible. But my message to them about laws, having been in the state of Connecticut in the General Assembly for 20 years, that, you know, oftentimes, you know, it's not perfect the first time that you pass it, and that it is an evolving or iterative process. And so you get it implemented first, and then you constantly work on it. The people who will be on the citizen review board will work on it, and then, because you'll learn things by doing that you just can't conceive of prior to actually operationalizing something. And so that would have been my suggestion to them. It still is.
That they pass it tonight?
No, that they that when it gets passed, that they don't think it's going to be perfect.
Gotcha. You know? So, like, as you pointed out a few shows ago, this isn't your call.
It's not.
The Board of Alders put a referendum question out to the public, and it passed.
Yep.
And the point of the referendum was, we had a civilian review board to monitor the police, and they felt it wasn't strong enough. So the point of the referendum, give it teeth.
Right.
And that was in 2013.
Yes.
It's
been a while.
Yeah, 2013. Yeah, and then now, 5 years later, they still haven't passed it, because it keeps coming back, this question about how to give it teeth.
Right.
And they really didn't give it any teeth. Like, a few different people are pointed a different way. And the question is, can you have subpoena power? And so a lot of the alders are convinced you can't. Your corporation counsel wrote that you can. The activists point to other places where it made the whole difference, they felt. Some of the questions, whether the president of the Board of Alders can give her subpoena power to that committee.
She wanted to give my subpoena power to that committee, but my subpoena power, as I understand it, is pretty specific to the Board of Alders.
Oh, so you could subpoena to what?
Well, in case they decide they don't want to meet.
Right. You can send a sheriff, like, right, to their house and pull them out of bed.
Right.
I know a guy once got pulled out. Yeah, I think you should use that sometimes. Like, you know what?
Most of them come to me.
Next time they turn down one of your top appointees,
yeah,
you could call like a 2 a.m. meeting. And then have them all pulled out of bed.
Oh, that's
interesting. Isn't that how you like
the
business?
Well, I haven't done it yet. I don't know. Paul, it sounds like you think that might be fun. Maybe to witness.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I hope you give us a heads up. Yeah, definitely. We'll definitely put that on Facebook Live. Yeah. So I think Bob is on the line. Bob, is that you?
Yes, it is, Paul. How are you today?
Good. How you doing, buddy?
All right. Happy Hanukkah, by the way.
Thank you.
Hello, Mayor. How are you?
Good, Bob. How you doing?
Okay, hanging in there.
Bob, that, you know, I'm not convinced. You need to be a little bit more chipper.
It's still early in the morning to me. But I guess my first question is about George H.W. Bush.
That's right. The president died.
You ever had a chance to meet him and... you know, your thoughts about him?
Well, you know, I've never met him. I do know that he, I believe he was born in Bridgeport. He grew up in Connecticut and went to Yale. And I know everyone at Yale is very proud of the fact that he and I believe his son as well, who became president, went to Yale.
I went to Yale. I'm not proud of that in the least. I'm sorry.
Well, there are some who are. Well, you know, everybody has a different way of seeing things. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that what you're hearing people say most about him is that he dedicated his life to public service. And I think that it is a high calling. I mean, there are times when I'm sure many of us didn't agree with some of his points of view, but he did give his life to serving what he thought were the values for the people of this great country.
He had a real sense of social responsibility.
Right.
He thought he should conduct himself by a certain set of values and be respectful and uphold traditions and govern responsibly. Yeah. I mean, he was a weak domestic president. He's sort of the flip side of LBJ. Mm-hmm. LBJ was a great domestic president and just couldn't find his way into foreign policy. And Bush, you know, obviously stumbled on the domestic issues, but knew what he was doing abroad. But you know what struck me, and I like, you know, because the Trump moment, everyone's talking about what a gentleman Bush was and how respectful and how he played nice. But I mean, he won his office with the Willie Horton ad. Mm-hmm. Which even, you know, the racist mm-hmm. ad that took us down another dark alley on the road to Trump.
I know, and which, you know, he'd like to go down that road again, tried to go down that road during this past election and during his election. So, but he was a gentleman. That's the difference. And, you know, I think
we'll take what we get.
I think that a lot of people, when they compare the two, the policies may, in fact, not be all that different.
They are somewhat different. Environmentalism, ADA, right. That kind of stuff, yeah.
But, you know, he was a gentleman. He, yeah. You know, and he did the things that a president ought to do. You know, he did some other things that were questionable. And
he paid attention to details
yeah.
when he conducted policy.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so...
He did not vilify his opponents when he was in office.
No?
He drew a distinction. His biographer was writing about this. He drew a distinction between getting in office and being in office.
Right. Well, I think that they're two different things. They yeah. really are.
And Bob, any other questions for Mayor Harp?
Yes, so we're going to do a 360 turn right here, Mayor.
Oh
and,
boy!
I'm going to ask you about a story I read in the Independent about overtime.
Uh-huh. Mm.
And it seems like it's out of control a little bit.
You're talking about that's police really overtime, right?
What
it's
I
running
was
at double.
About the police overtime.
Yeah, it says it's two times over what was budgeted, and Chief Campbell thought it wasn't realistic, given all the people were leaving. I think they're going to be seven in the next week.
Yeah, we're down over 100 police officers. And so the real question that you have to ask yourself, and I don't think that we have, I think that we're providing the kind of policing that we need for a city our size. And that means if you don't have the officers, and we don't, we're down 100, and we could be down another 100 and 30 by the end of beginning of February, depending upon a number of things, then you end up having to spend more money on overtime. And as I recall, one of the things that and we said during the budget process that there would be pressure on the overtime budget if we couldn't really fill those positions quickly, and we had some difficulty doing that. And so we will have some officers on the street, hopefully, but they will not be independent for another probably even 3 or 4 months.
Meaning they have to be with a training yeah, officer.
Right. So, and then we have this whole issue of these are the things that I worry about a little bit. We have this whole issue of the negotiation for the next contract. And I've been told that depending upon how the healthcare issue turns out, we may lose, you know, 30, 40 more people who could actually go. And so how do we police a city when we have so many people leaving? One of the things that I have asked our personnel department to do and our Civil Service Commission to do is to give us the ability to have a lateral police officer. So just like other departments are taking our officers after we train them, we can take officers from other towns if we had this position when they've retired from their towns and stuff.
Oh, great idea.
So we're working really hard to do this. I think
so it's be looking for retirees, not trying to poach the ones who get benefits.
Right. Well,
that's what they do to us. We get they get better benefits in the suburbs and pay, so they pick off our young cops. But you're saying get the experienced cops?
Get the experienced.
Because they're not that old always when they're retiring.
I don't know.
45,
you know,
50.
Tony Walker and I used to laugh because the same thing is true of state correction officers. They're getting ready to retire at sometimes 40, 45. You know, if they went in at 20, they're there 20 years. You know, my joke is I know some parents who have young people who, well, they're not young anymore, but have been in college for that long, are 40 and still haven't had their first real professional job. And then you've got some people who are retiring at that age. I don't know. It was a joke to me, but
that's a really interesting idea about going for not old retirees.
Right.
And also, you know, in the very, very, very short term, in terms of when the cops hit the street and have to be a field training officers, is that going to be soon?
I'm hoping so. I think that it's either going to be in January, late January, early February.
Okay, so that is the colder weather,
right,
when there is less street crime.
Right.
So it gives us a few months until you need more people out on the street alone.
And we're going to have to do a new class, maybe in 19, maybe two classes.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could get officers who are young and have retired from and still want to do this work from other towns, then that will help.
That was a really creative idea. Who came up with that one?
You know, it's something we've been trying to do for 4 years. I finally said to the chief, I said, well, you know, we have a very limited number of people who work in our HR and personnel departments. We really do. And I know people were really upset when they got raises. Some of those people hadn't had raises for 7 years.
I know, but one woman in particular, she doesn't get paid a whole lot.
Yeah. And so, because they're so short-staffed, it's been really hard to do. But I finally had to put my foot down and say to the CAO, and it's got to happen.
So you mean a recruiting drive? Is that what you mean?
Well, it's not only that. We need to actually have the position. And it's got to be approved by the civil service.
But we have 100 vacant police positions.
I know, but the way in which they are...
Oh, right now they have to be filled by going to the academy?
Yes. Now, can you imagine?
Oh, that is bizarre.
Isn't that bizarre? So we are going to...
Very interesting. So lateral moves, almost like a dance. We're going to go lateral to...
Yeah, kind of like a waltz.
Bob,
could ask one more question.
Yeah, yeah, you got one more, Bob.
Of the mayor is about overtime. Does she think it's... Is it a rampant thing, like in other departments?
No, I don't think it's... I think that it's only used when necessary. One of the really great things that Michael Carter did when he was the chief administrative officer and what Sean Madison is doing is that they meet on a weekly basis on overtime with the departments. They go through every single...
Well, police and fire are the biggies, and you hired a lot more firefighters, right, but you're still somewhat hamstrung by our contract about how many officers that...
Sure, a minimum manning and all of that. Yeah. But they meet on a weekly basis, and we try to make sure that there is pressure to assure that we're only doing what is necessary.
Hey, Bob, thanks a lot, buddy. Have a great week, and thanks for calling Mayor Monday on WNHH 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenfm.org. We're here with Mayor Tony Harp, and in terms of who's here visibly and going to be speaking soon, Michael Harris, her special assistant. But I'd like to just get quickly to online. Eric Mastriano says, hello. Hello, Eric, and congratulations on your race recently completed. Tom wanted to ask you about George Bush. Ned Lamont, fellow Greenwich resident, native, had a press release heralding him as a civil Republican. Is this something state Democrats should be doing in 2018, celebrating civility despite policy differences?
You know, one of the things that you learn once you become the governor, once you become a member of the General Assembly, and, you know, in many of our towns where they're both parties, is that if you really want to run government, and that's after the election, you've got to work with everybody on both sides of the aisle. So civility is really important.
And we'll get back to other questions. But first, I want to say good morning again to my... Oh, and we have another Harp on Explosion. Oh, this was tweeting you on went out on what you're saying, that we're down another 30-40 next February. Mike Harris, special assistant, you've been working on a number of projects with the mayor's administration and with people in the community about digital inclusion and new enterprises. And you want to come tell us a few things about that, beginning with some recognition from the National League of Cities.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the last year and a half, I've been the mayor's designee with the Elm City Innovation Collaborative, which is a new organization that we created in answer to the CT Next Innovation Places program.
And that's a state quasi-public agency, had dollars, so this didn't come out of New Haven tax dollars. They said, we want to have innovation hubs in the state. We want to have new tech enterprises. New Haven was a happening place. You competed. I remember the mayor put together a team, took everybody on a tour, and they said, here, what was it, like $2 million?
Yeah, so this program was actually put together right after the time that GE left. And so the narrative that the Republicans spun was that taxes were driving out companies, but all these companies were going to these high tax places like Boston.
Yeah, people always leave that part out.
Yeah, and so actually, they're going to places they want to be, and you know, compared to when these corporate headquarters were put together back in the 50s, where workers would move to the job, now these jobs are chasing the workers to where the workers want to be. And so the question is, if you're driving an economy, you need to create a place that workers want to live and stay, and the companies will follow. And so actually our state delegation and Martin Looney and people fought several years ago to create this program called Innovation Places. That's saying that if we can create these hubs, we can draw companies there and have economic growth for the state as a whole. And so since then, you know, the mayor helped us compete and put together a team to win that designation. So we've been getting $2 million a year for 3 years to support programs.
What year are we in, Mike?
So we're just entering our second year. In our first year, we had programs that ranged from the new Innovation Center at the library to programs like CoLab that are coaching community members on how to
right, do and then the types they get of the weeds, and they get people who have new enterprises. They give them these micro grants to get started.
Absolutely.
They get the one about how everyone gets to each other's, who wants to cook a dinner for everybody else and that kind of stuff. That was fun.
So things range from that all the way up to the high tech. So New Haven has an amazing strength in life sciences and drug discovery. There are people in New Haven working in labs to cure cancer, to invent new antibiotics. And so giving them some of the physical resources of new lab space and testing facilities that they need to grow. So one of the things that the mayor's been pushing us to focus on in the course of this last summer has been, how do we make more of these jobs accessible to New Haven residents? Because in life sciences, we've been working with Southern Connecticut State University in the BioPath program. But if you're going to work in a lab, you need at least an undergraduate, if not a graduate degree in chemistry or biology or one of those fields. And that can take 6 years and a lot of money. And so our focus was, how do we make these jobs accessible? And we found that software skills could get you a high-paying job without going to college. And so we put together this proposal called The Cities That Code that was based upon a challenge from the National League of Cities. So they said, as this public challenge to the country, cities come up with ideas that will help drive economic growth in innovative ways. So we put together this proposal that is a three-part proposal as a challenge to our citywide partners to train New Haven residents on how to have professional level software skills. So this is particularly relevant. Today is actually the start of National Computer Science Education Week. So if you're interested in learning programming, listening to this, you can actually go on Google's page and take an hour orientation to computer science. But this grew out of what has been a citywide push for the last few years. There's organizations across the city already doing some of this work. So things like CodeHaven, which is a group of Yale undergraduates that teach computer programming, courses at the library where you can go in and learn some of the basics.
So you're trying to round up people in New Haven who might not have college degrees, but you want to get jobs at these bioscience places. How does this fit into the multi-million dollar investment that's coming from Silicon Valley to our new district tech hub in Fairhaven?
Absolutely.
Where they're going to get people, they don't have to pay the tuition until they get jobs that pay like $100,000 a year. To also create that pathway, how does that fit in with that?
So that's actually a portion of our overall plan. Was we need to promote opportunities like the Holberton School. The work that David Salinas has done to recruit a partner of that caliber is really phenomenal, and is one of the things that is already driving companies. Companies now want to come to New Haven to have some of their workers, or even hire out of that pipeline.
So you guys got an award for that?
Yeah, so the National League of Cities recognized this public commitment. They picked 50 cities across the country. New Haven was one of them. And we actually went out to the National League of Cities City Summit in Los Angeles this last month. But their program is that over the course of 2019, they used their network of foundations and support and technical assistance to help us succeed. So this is an exciting initiative we're going to be announcing this week that is calling on local partners to help us encourage residents to learn how to program. Because if you talk to anybody who works in this field, they'll say it's hard. You can't just learn
in a class. So you have this stuff in place ready to roll, a whole bunch of places you can learn how to program.
Yeah.
You're going to get more money from it from the National League of Cities through their foundations?
So we're going to be working with them to support individual programs within New Haven. We haven't lined up any of that funding yet, but a good portion of it is putting New Haven in the national attention as a place that is
And this week, you're going to be putting out the call with people, specific ways they can sign up. So if you're listening, mm-hmm. you want to learn computer coding and get one of these new jobs in the future coming in New Haven, sign up this week. How do they find out about it, Mike?
So the first place they can sign up, if they have an interest in becoming a software engineer, the Holverton School is the soup to nuts best program that we have to get somebody professional skills. The average salary for somebody in Connecticut working in this field, the average starting salary is $72,000 a year, which is twice New Haven's median household income.
It's going to be 38 years to get near that. Yeah, so how are they going to sign up for that?
So you can go to Holberton School New Haven, throw that into Google.
H-O-L.
H-O-L-B-E-R-T-O-N.
Okay.
New Haven. And we're going to be discussing other programs coming up at things like the libraries, talking about how can we expose students in schools using both curriculum and after-school programs. We have some City Hall staffers who in their free time have already started working with Girls Who Code to set up a Girls Who Code chapter based out of City Hall.
Awesome.
And we'll be working with and pushing all of our partners because the economy of the future is going to require software skills. And if we don't start exposing the promise that this sector has and provide stepping stones in that direction, we're not going to have the economic growth that the city needs.
That sounds great. Any thoughts on that, Mayor Hart?
No, I'm excited about it. You know, and I hope that people go over to the Ives Library and see all of the resources that we have there. We have professionals there that can help you, can train you so that you can use some of this high-functioning equipment. 3D printers, I never even imagined.
I'm still getting my mind around that. The gun comes out of your printer. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And
I'll be happy when the pizza comes out of the pizza.
But there are all these things that will, you know, once you're trained, are going to be free to New Haven residents to use. So that's an awesome thing that we're doing.
And part of the evolution of the library, too. I believe we're at some of our record numbers that people use in the library, even though books are still around, but even though so much is online now, and that's one of the ways they've stayed relevant.
And one of the things that everybody doesn't have a computer or access to the internet, and the library does. And so it's one place that you can go to that sort of makes everybody have the same sort of equal access to this technology that's driving our economy across the world. I've got to thank Mike. He's, you know, one, he's a really smart guy, but beyond that, he's a hard worker and he's pulled together everyone across the city to work on this issue. And so it's one of the reasons we were recognized. So I just want to thank
excellent. I saw a video. I think you might have put it together, Mike, about New Haven being a tech hub. Shayna Snyder was and that was kind of cool. That was kind of fun showing all the tech stuff. I hadn't been in some of those spaces and some of the stuff that happens. My favorite part was it talks about what a tech hub New Haven is. And that's actually very convincing about going to the district and places like that. But I noticed that in the first half, I was waiting to see what it would look like when you go in the hubs. Because I've been in a tour at a couple of them lately, like the Health Haven Hub and in 195 Church. And they're real things. Like, you know, the way businesses work now, not everybody has a factory or an office. They need a place where they come a few hours a week for the office, or they can hold meetings there, meet up with other people. So often when you go in, nothing's happening. Mm-hmm. Like when I was up at Health Haven, nothing was happening. A lot's happening there, but you don't actually see it with your eyes when you walk in. So the first day of the video,
it varies by sector so much, which is shocking, which is in the medical field and all of the companies that they're working with, they're actually working with researchers and doctors who are starting up these companies in their spare time.
Right.
So 9 to 5, The lead people actually aren't in there. It's on the weekends and at the night and during their lunch hour.
But I loved how the video morphed. So at the beginning, it's saying a lot's happening. And I say, well, I was there. I didn't see much. Oh, but there, two people were typing on a keyboard. I was thinking a lot of what happens is people are typing on keyboards. They're having conversations with venture capitalists who might give you like $20 million or with someone who's in Chicago while you're in New Haven discovering a cure for cancer. But all you see is they're like typing on a keyboard. But in the second half of the video, there were a lot of other things happening where they were talking ideas.
And there are a lot of synergies that happen because there, you know, like you have lawyers that are there that help people start their companies, and they can use a little bit of the IT stuff. I know that Comcast NBC is going to be there so that they're in the district so that, you know, those opportunities sort of sort of fertilizing.
Right. And Mirtha Kaliner has a law practice just for helping entrepreneurs get started, and that's what's there.
And so, you know, like, you get to have conversations with people who can actually help you go that next step so that you don't have to figure it out all by yourselves. And because it's so open and people can talk to each other, there's always food and coffee and tea.
I noticed that in the video too. You moved on to that and the happy hour.
Yeah. And gyms and beer gardens and kayak launches.
But that just is really kind of happening there. It's interesting how that happened overnight. I mean, a year ago that wasn't existing.
Right, it wasn't. But they've been working on it for a while.
Yeah. But I also thought that was interesting, the choice you made. You went with local entrepreneurs who were doing Jobs for the Future over an out-of-state property owner who had more of a resume, but you've had some fights with him over property, and he wanted to put a conventional, like, wanted to put a supermarket there. It looked like a gamble paid off. I mean, that was
It's exciting. I think that we're doing some phenomenal work, and you know, it's there, but it's all over the city. You know, like in these little places, there are these little,
like Willow Street or the Grove. You know,
Right on Chapel Street as well. So you know, you're seeing it all across the city, and you know, actually it's sort of seeping into the suburbs as well, and it's connected as well to our very strong educational platform that we have here, with Gateway being downtown, with University of New Haven, Yale, of course.
I was interested that one of the fast growing companies in the district is UNH grads.
Right.
University of New Haven, that was kind of interesting.
It is, and you know, and Albertus Magnus, so that all of these young people coming together are really helping to sort of build this economy for the greater New Haven area.
And then, Mike, I think you were also involved in this new mini grants that the Collab people are putting out. Collab is the group formed through this initiative of innovation. Mm-hmm. Caroline Smith, Elizabeth Nearing, Ben Berkowitz from C-Click Fix. And you're challenging people, tell me if I have this right, because I probably don't. You're challenging people to come with an idea that would connect a project that would connect, let's say, New Hallville to downtown or Orange Street to Fairhaven, and you get $2,500 to put it through. Is that what that is? Or?
Yeah, so I mean, it's the same idea of trying to bet on local ideas to transform our spaces. So, I mean, if you're walking around town, I think there's plenty of spaces that you can pass by and are maybe not as appealing or aren't as appreciated as they could be. And so there are wonderful little parks. There are wonderful pieces of art that when I walk around the city make me proud to live here, that make me more likely to spend time there, that make me more likely to sit and meet new people. And so the challenge is, where in some particular neighborhoods could we better use our physical spaces to link each other together, to connect us?
That's
so it's called the Could Be Fund.
I like that.
To try to spark some imagination.
And could be fun.
It could be fun if to apply.
That was intentional, right?
Yeah.
I was looking at the headline and said, oh, that's what that is.
It actually came, we were having one of our planning meetings, and somebody just said the sentence, the spaces that connect us, that divide us, could be the spaces that unite us. And so I think everybody stopped.
One of my favorite projects
like,
of that were the murals they painted under the highway overpasses that divided Jocelyn Square from State Street and downtown from Upper State.
Absolutely.
And it seemed like Jocelyn Square might be one of those perfect places.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking for more ideas like that. So you can go onto the New Haven Independent, read the article about it. The application is going live probably this afternoon.
All right.
People can go and apply. It's like a rolling application, but we're doing small grants, so below $2,000 for small pieces of art or projects or a bench. But we have up to $25,000 for larger installations. So streetscape furniture, larger murals, things like that, lighting projects.
Do you remember years ago that Philip, was named Philip Johnson, that guy who did the statues on the green that were human-like?
Oh, yes, I remember that, yeah.
Those are fun to talk about.
Those are fun, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I love public art.
This is a kind of a connection between a business that's done really well and technology here, Technolutions, and then people appreciating New Haven. I went to church yesterday at Center Church on the Green, and there were all of these sort of new people there, maybe five people that I noticed I'd never seen before. And they were from Jackson, Mississippi.
Oh.
And the reason that they came to New Haven was to visit Technolutions, because the young man, I believe his name is Alexander Clark, who initiated that, who was the founder of that. Grew up, I guess, in Jackson, Mississippi.
What is Technolutions? I've seen the name, but
it's a software company that enables better processing of applications to universities.
Oh, right.
Yeah, And so the thing that was really cool is they came, the mother of this young man evidently really likes New Haven. And so she brought her choir.
Oh, wow.
And so they did all of that stuff. They walked around New Haven. I guess today they're going to Technolutions to see what that is. But they were really impressed with our little town. It was amazing. But there is that connection between, you know, like the IT development here and then really connecting other people from New Haven and around, but also from outside of New Haven.
Well, like that Health Haven hub, when I went up there, when things were happening, I just couldn't see it in 3D, had to have 4D. You know, like I think there was someone, one of the founders is from Chicago, but she went to SOM, working with someone here, and the woman showing me around, lives in Brooklyn, but manages it remotely, but comes up half the week and had gone to the public health school. So yeah, geographically, people are much more spread out, but yet more connected than ever. And so I guess what these hubs were trying to cement it here, right?
I think that we are. We want people to actually live here and enjoy it here and be connected here, right,
yeah.
Mike?
And I think it's both connections outside of New Haven like that, or for visitors, the first time that they're coming into the city to have an experience that makes them want to stay, invest, and live here. But it's also connecting people who do live here now who may not feel as connected or welcome in some of the places. So thinking of some place like Science Park, where there are world-changing innovations happening. They're doing stunning research. Companies in Science Park have had $100 million IPOs in the course of the last year, but there's a fence that can disconnect the people who live on the other side of what's literally called Division Street in Newhallville from feeling a sense of shared purpose, shared identity, that they're welcome there. And so,
they used to block off the street.
They used to block off the street.
Until Tony and others on the Board of Alders voted to lift that fence. Do you remember that?
I don't. But
Westchester Avenue was fenced on both ends.
So Concat has made a lot of progress with their Orchid Cafe. There's now a community garden that's going in along that side. And so I think
the Farmington Canal Trail. You can come all the way through.
You can come through
from Division Street on the Farmington Canal Trail.
So I think that's one of the places where we're interested in seeing outdoor seating or public art or something that can better connect those neighborhoods in that space.
Because it's always like the way the bakery didn't quite work when it was two steps away on the other side there, you know, when they tried the whole gig. Yeah. And connect as well. You're doing that on Mayor. We're making the connections on Mayor Monday on WNHHFM, your home for community radio, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. I'll get to a couple more other questions later, but I wanted to ask you about, you know, we talked about Mayor Harp, the good gamble you made on district. You had a Connecticut bus depot. Whom do you pick to develop that? That was done by Matthew Nemerson, who was your development administrator, worked on some major projects. He's now left as of last week. And people are wondering what comes next. And we've talked on this show about that before, about if you're going to restructure some of these jobs, combine either the city plan director with the development administrator or the Else Livable City Initiative with the economic. Any thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I will be honest with you. We'll probably just select another economic development administrator. In the meantime, Michael Piscatelli, who is the deputy economic development administrator, who also wears the hat as the director of planning, at least for the time being.
Acting city plan director.
Yes.
And now he's acting development administrator. Yeah. We should hire him at Lazy Parking. Oh, he's as acting parking fee collector.
Well, and you know, I mean, one of the things I've got to worry about now is, you know, like the Lamont administration sort of picking off everybody. But, you know, we're going to look
at... It's a good problem if you can call them up, right?
Yeah.
Tell them they still work for you and they're going to send you money.
Yeah, especially that. So long story short, you know, like we're going to take a look at how we do things and we may make some changes when we go through the budget process.
But are you going to hire internally or are you going to do some big search?
You know, I think that we will do both. You know, certainly right now we've hired from an interim point of view internally. And I'm hoping that Michael will be willing to stay for at least a year.
Oh, okay.
And so...
So you're going to wait a year to replace the...
I think I will, yeah. And we'll just see how things go.
And what's the thinking on that one? Does it give you time to think of more structural changes or to see who goes to the Lamont administration or what's
Well, it gives us more time to see, you know, what is... to sort of see the landscape. And the other thing, there are a number of... I think we're really busy right now with economic development. And so there are a number of these projects that I want to see move forward.
We're thinking like the Webster Bank building, the Boutique Hotel. We're thinking of the Live, Work, Learn, Play.
Right.
We're thinking of the two that now you got the lawsuit settlement with a competitor, so now you can build two separate projects at Olive and Chapel. Is that what you're thinking?
I'm thinking that we have those kinds of things. We've also got garages on Route 34. I mean, there are things going on all over the city, and I think that it's going to require someone that has had experience working with the city, working through our process, and so that's one of the reasons that I asked Mike to do this work.
But for a year, you're saying? Acting for a year?
For a year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to one of the developers of the project you mentioned just now, I won't say which, and a lot of people are talking about how long this moment's going to last. So you've been mayor at a time where you had an opportunity when people are willing to invest, you don't have to bribe them to do it, right?
Right.
Instead, you can negotiate what you want.
Right.
Which I don't think you and I had seen that in our lifetimes in New Haven before that because of a number of factors.
Right.
Including safer city, Yale involvement, economy, all that kind of stuff.
We're 18.7 square miles. There's only so much that can be done.
So in any case, people are saying with interest rates going up, with the uncertainty of trade wars, although there was good news on that front from China yesterday, mm-hmm. when are steel prices going to go up? When is it going to cost more to build? When are we going to have a recession? We're in a year from, if there's no recession within a year, it'll be the longest period in American history, I believe, when there's not been a recession. So it's going to be a recession at some point. Sure. So this building boom is going to stop. And I guess you're saying you want some continuity to get these things over the line.
Yes, that's what I would like to see happen.
All right.
And that's what I will work towards.
All right. Tom asked, Mayor, how do you feel your management team budget presentations are going? What has stood out to you in audience feedback? And those are you're going to all the community management teams in town, talking about how city budget works, preparing people for next year, and also hearing what people have to say.
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that I was glad to see is that people seem very interested in it. You know, it could be the kind of thing that would be sort of like eating sawdust. But it seemed like people were genuinely...
Oh, you mean listening to a budget presentation?
Yeah.
I heard it did get shorter, though. It started out at 40 minutes, the part before they react, to 20 now.
Yeah, we've learned some things, you know, that they don't want to know every single thing and where every single T is crossed and everything.
And as you said, attention deficit too. Like, at what point do people kind of lose it? Like a person gives a sermon in church or a synagogue, after 20 minutes, do they kind of lose the thread?
Yeah, I think 15, 20 minutes is about all people can tolerate. And, you know, you kind of get an idea because they start leaving. but I do think that people have shown that they're interested in it, and that even I've heard some of our aldermen say that they were not as aware of the entire process.
They just voted and conducted that process.
Well, I'm just saying, you know, there were some things that we do that they were not so aware of. And so in terms of how we put things together. And so I think it's a good learning experience for the entire community.
All right. And anything changed besides the length of the first part of the presentation, what you're hearing from people?
You know, I mean, it depends upon who is in the audience. There's certain people, you know, if you're on FRAC,
or you go to those
meetings.
Group,
yeah.
Budget Watch,
so, you know, of course, Mr. Joyner, you know, like he's going to have his
in
point
New
of
Hallville.
View.
Yes. Not Ed Joyner, Ken Joyner.
Yeah, Ken Joyner.
That's one of those great New Haven names.
Yeah.
I feel like every few years we're hearing a lot about someone named Joyner, and sometimes they're all related. Sometimes they probably have to go to DNA registry to find out if they're related.
Yeah, sometimes it's a Y and sometimes it's an I, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, I think that it creates an opportunity to have conversations at a more granular level with more people than we get to do through the budget process, which, by the way, is very open. But, you know, you have people who are coming to testify on specific things in the budget. This is about the process. And so I think that we've learned a lot, and I think people have learned a lot as well.
It's good to get out there.
I think it is good. You know, one of the things that we did, Adam, and I don't know if we'll do it in every neighborhood, but we have done a lot in New Hallville. We just wanted to ask them, what have you seen that the city's done?
Well, there was a group that looked at New Hallville a year ago and now called LISC, Low Income Something Support Corporation. It's a national group. Roland Young's been involved mm-hmm. with the nonprofit. And they were hired to monitor how you guys are spending $1 million on something called the Burn Grant. They have mm-hmm. a new long bureaucratic name for it. We are going on strike against that name. We're going to continue calling it the Burn Grant. We just tried it out loud 5 times. We just couldn't do it. We'll put it in the articles. But in any case, they said that a lot has happened in New Hallville. They had an objective look at it from the outside. They said the money has been spent well, because we raised a question about some of that in the Independent. And they said that the name is not only a lot safer, but that people are doing stuff they weren't doing before, working with the kids, like the youth ambassadors and there was a thumbs up on that last week.
So the thing that is really amazing about New Hallville and the community management team there is that not only have they organized their community, that particular management team had more people than any of the others, but they had people who gave reports that actually had a role and a responsibility to that team. There are at least five different types of reports that were given by different people, so that they've actually distributed leadership. And the other thing that they've done is that they did the 65 days in New Haven.
They did the One City Initiative, getting all other neighborhood management teams involved.
They did, and they're going to continue working on that. And so they have really been the focus, and that a lot of what they did had to do with getting some of that burn money to do it for some of the
organizations. It's great that New Hallville's been on the move. You also had the sweep started there. We have all your different departments. Right. Go through inspectors to see how to fix stuff. And there's always controversy in New Hallville. You know, a lot of jobs got lost there over the decades from the Winchester factory. And there was, when you came in, people were getting buried a lot in New Hallville.
But I think the thing that I was going to say about them is that they have actually pulled in the rest of the city into their excitement about what they can do in their neighborhood, and helped other community management teams get to be more excited about what they're doing in their own neighborhoods. And they form these collaborations that I think are really great.
Grassroots.
Yeah.
The Learning Corridor, too. Even talk about that. Brett Hoover, the Hamden Board of Education recently decided to close schools, and as a result, more than 100 New Haven resident students may be returning to the New Haven Public Schools from Wintergreen. We don't know if that's actually going to close, or they're going to move it to another building or keep it in their present building. We actually had a bunch of articles about that in New Haven Independent. I know that New Haven Public Schools is already at a 50-year enrollment high. I didn't know that. But what is the enrollment capacity of our city schools? How close are we if this happens? Thank you for that question, Brett Hoover.
It's a good question. I think that it depends upon the school. We still have some room. I don't know if we have room for, you know, like 100 students. I read your article, too, and it looks to me like ASIS is going to be looking for either buying the current building that they're in or finding some other space. So I would imagine that Wintergreen will continue perhaps where it currently is.
So it sounds like you're saying that the betting money is they're not going to be coming to New Haven. If they do, are we ready?
We will be ready, yes. We are always ready.
You know, school statistics shock me. I was looking in those articles to find out that more than 65% of Hamden schools are students of color. Mm-hmm. Not how we think of Hamden, especially when we look at who makes the decisions in Hamden. And in the hearing we had about English language learners, what we used to call English second language in New Haven last week, we find out that 46% of our student body is Latinx.
Yep.
30, I don't know if I'm saying that right. That's young people teaching us these terms. 37% is African American and 13% white in the public schools. It's something I'm still getting used to, the fact that we're a plurality Latinx school system.
Mm-hmm. No, that's absolutely the case. We are very aware of that and are trying to do everything we can to serve that population.
Lyric Hall up for sale. That's in the old antique store that they revived the Vaudeville Studio Theater in there. That's mm-hmm. so wonderful. A lot of stuff goes on there. Any thoughts about what can go in there?
Well, you know, one of the things that we wonder is, should it be a public space so that we keep it available to the public in perpetuity?
Meaning take it into private, public, like nonprofit ownership or city ownership, or what were you thinking?
Yeah, maybe one or the other, because, you know, the real, and I don't know, that's a question. I'd be really interested in hearing what people think about that.
We had some interesting comments about it. Henry Fernandez suggested that group, the Long Wharf Theater, Schubert and Albertus, who wanted their space, why don't they go there?
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, the people who do the Costume Music Hall, I wonder if they'd want to do something there, the way you use that other space in the hall to kind of build events around what could be small performances. I think there's a lot of interest in that space.
No, I think there's a lot that could happen there. So we've got a lot to think about.
All right. Well, we had a lot to talk about today. Mike Harris, thanks for joining us on Mayor
Absolutely.
Monday.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
And he's no stranger to the WNHH studio, does some great work here on teaching people how government works through podcast. Mayor Harp, thanks so much for coming in. It's always such a great way to start our week.
And I really, it's good to be here, Paul.
Oh, you lit the Christmas tree. And I was gonna hang out to watch you do it, but it was cold. I walked by because you had 3,000 lights with one switch, right?
That's right.
What was that like?
Oh, more 30? than 30,000.
I always get my zeros wrong. I'm
I know.
Sorry.
Maybe almost 40.
And Brett Hoover says thank you. Really?
And yes, and we lit the menorah last night.
That's right. So what was it like lighting almost 40,000 lights with the turn of a switch?
Well, it was very easy because it was the turn of a switch. But it was so beautiful. It's a beautiful Christmas.
Well, Christmas, Hanukkah, the seasons.
The holiday tree.
The holidays. No, what I'm saying is that with these holidays, light is the theme.
That's right.
Light is the ritual.
It's all about the fact that we are going into the darkest time on earth, and that all it takes is one little candle to create the light, right?
All right.
And so we celebrate light.
What better way to end on than that? Thank you very much. And thanks to Gateway Community College and Bertram Moses PC for providing support for today's program. As usual, we're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It Feel to Be Free from the group CD, A Plea for Peace. So in the words of Woody Guthrie, I wish you to take it easy, but take it.